You! I told you before. I'm paying you to wash dishes, not to listen to that rock and roll. I got a whole restaurant full of people out there. You're moving in 2 feet. Slow and stop.
Run it up, White Claw Hard Seltzer Studios on a Friday night. Gabe Swartz is with the program for the full hour, a glorious 60 minutes of college football and betting discussion to be had. I do want to start off with Tennessee and Auburn. That was promised. Is there any insight? I'll start with Justin, since he is the woeful Tennessee fan in the room. Do you care at this point anymore? Does it matter?
I mean, of course I care. You're not really playing for much. You're playing for the future at this point. I can't just not care, unfortunately. It would be a lot cooler if I could. But, no, you're not really playing for anything at this point.
Gabe Swartz, do you care?
About Tennessee and Auburn?
Yeah.
This is one of the old sayings. You know, there's a lot of sports that go into my brain, and at some point there has to be a cutoff point. In terms of, like, knowing stuff, but there also has to be a cutoff point in terms of, like, caring about stuff. So I'm not even going to lie. Like, I don't care who wins this game. I just want to see the optimal amount of fan outrage from people in both Auburn, Alabama.
They're just both upset.
Knoxville. I just want to see a game in which... So actually, yes, I do care, but, you know, as you've said before, some people just want to see chaos. I just want to see Guarantano do dumb stuff, and I want to see Bo Nix rolling out, throwing dumb throws, throwing dumb picks, too. So, yes.
Please, for the love of God, just play Harrison Bailey. I don't know why he came out in the press conference after releasing a depth chart that said he was going to start JG again. It was like, oh, well, we don't know who we're going to start on Saturday. Like, if you're going to say that, just play Harrison Bailey for me. Give me something to watch.
A quote from Tennessee cornerback Alante Taylor, who will in large part inherit part of the responsibility trying to cover Seth Williams, a presumed NFL draft pick, this upcoming year. Quote, these folks done woke the demon out me. It is up in smoke with everybody.
You know how just tone deaf you have to be to talk trash like that when you're 2-4? And not only are you 2-4, and I know that kids like this would not care at all, but they're also 1-4-1 against the spread. So the great thing.
Alante Taylor does not care about if Tennessee's covering or not.
Yeah, but I'm saying when you're an underdog and not only do you lose, but you don't even keep games competitive to the point that people think that you should, stop talking trash.
I also think it's funny how his pinned tweet is bosses move in silence, ellipses. That was from November 8th. That doesn't sound very silent. I don't know. I'm not clowning on Alante Taylor. I'm sure he's a wonderful guy. And he's a good football player. I like the mentality. Not spirit broken. Going to go out there and go hopefully play hard against Auburn. We'll see what happens. The best win of Pruitt's career came on the Plains a couple years ago.
I was going to say, yeah.
So.
They're not trending in the right direction, though. 1-4 against the spread in their last 5 games. So they're getting worse.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
You're just a ray of sunshine in my day today, Gabe.
Justin, I live to please you on Friday night.
Moving on.
Pause.
Yeah. So let's talk, Gabe, about what Ian intended on us talking about here. I can't with you two. So let's talk about BYU and Cincinnati. Castellanos, deep drive out to left. What would the magnitude of a BYU and Cincinnati scheduled game be if they can make this happen? They both have an open date in 2 weeks. Now, this has been kicked around a little, not a lot. I don't even know if it's feasible, but if these two teams decided to get together and play, what would that mean?
It'd mean a lot of money for each school. It would mean the most exposure, and the most, like, pretend to talk about potential college football playoff teams that won't actually make the college football playoff.
I don't think it would be pretend. I don't think it would be pretend.
Peyton, I think that you're giving way too much belief that the college football playoff committee actually is willing to entertain teams like this in getting in.
You think if Cincinnati goes out there and rolls BYU with their bevy of top 25 wins, with the fact that Tulsa, they only have two losses, and I know Tulsa's been living on the edge the last couple of weeks. They won in incredible fashion last night. They've not looked great, but their only two losses would be barely eking out a loss against Oklahoma State and Stillwater to open the year and getting pounded by Cincinnati. And then Cincinnati's just beaten everybody that's been put in front of them by a lot. If they did it against another top 10 team, which, by the way, these two teams are angling to be the most highly ranked teams in the G5 in the college football playoff era, I just think it is a more legitimate case than maybe a lot of people are making it out to be, especially if Ohio State squeaks one out against Indiana this week, and then Wisconsin beats Northwestern badly, but gets another game canceled and isn't eligible for the conference title, so Ohio State's only good win would be over Indiana.
I don't think that you can assume that games are going to get canceled.
I'm outlying the path.
I also think that we have to understand that there's no historical precedent that has shown that the College Football Playoff Committee they have used a bevy of different arguments to justify decisions in different manners. There's really no criteria that they hard and fast will follow no matter what. But what they have shown consistently is that they will keep those group of five teams close enough to be in the conversation because it's good for TV ratings and it adds another thing to talk about, but far enough away that there has to be an overwhelming amount of dominoes falling in ways that they statistically are not very likely to in order for them to get in. And so it just won't happen. And that's why the best thing that we could ever get and extra TV money for all of these programs would just be a group of five championship every single year and a group of five college football playoff of give me the champion, give me the Mountain West champ, give me the American champ, if you wanted the MAC champ.
MAC champ.
That'd be
really weird for them. They wouldn't be playing on a Tuesday night. They'd be playing on a Saturday in primetime.
Yeah, and then put an at-large bid at the fourth and just have a four-team playoff.
I don't like that.
Why not?
I think that what I was going to propose to you was basically what would be happening with Cincinnati and BYU, which is a G5 championship. And I can read you all the stats about how competitive the G5 has been with the P5 in some of these bowl games, but I think what you're saying is that if they played a championship game, it wouldn't matter. It wouldn't even help. This would be the ideal scenario. This is the most trust the committee has put in two G5 teams. It's this year. BYU and Cincinnati will be the highest-ranked teams in the playoff era that have not played in a power conference or had a golden helmet like Notre Dame does ever. This is the year, though. If they play this quote-unquote G5 championship game against BYU and Cincinnati, I just don't get the point of doing a separate playoff for the G5 schools when it means nothing and to be champion of the G5, you might as well go play in the FCS at that point.
But here's the thing. So, A, we haven't gotten a first college football playoff ranking, and what we have seen historically is that the AP poll has generally been higher on UCF, because it's most of the time it's been UCF. Most of the time the AP poll has been higher on UCF than the college football playoff has been the first time that it's released, right? Because they want to have that.
Yeah, like, they want to get people interested.
Whether they will admit it or not, like I said earlier, they want to keep it so that a ton of dominoes have to fall in order for them to actually get UCF or Cincinnati.
Sure, absolutely.
And I think the question I would pose is, are Cincinnati and BYU, and we'll lean towards Cincinnati because we believe that their resume is better and that their physical tools are better, is Cincinnati actually a better option than a UCF team that had Mackenzie Milton and some pros across the board with Gabriel Davis and other guys like that?
Mm-hmm.
Is Cincinnati a better option than UCF, or are our hands just tied And have we not had enough football seen from other teams and had so many games canceled that we're just looking for good teams, and so we're propping them up into this conversation because...
I don't think so. I'm going to cut you off there. I don't think so. I think the Cincinnati team is going to come out, especially if they beat BYU, if this happens, with the best resume a G5 team has produced. And they've killed everybody. So I do think this team is better than, maybe not better as a football team, but I think it's close. This defense is a lot better than the UCF defenses of old. I think that this team has a legitimate case to make. I think they're better than the average bear out of the G5. Not BYU. Cincinnati does so.
Yeah, and I think that they can be competitive, and clearly that's been seen. We've seen that as the case because, like, UCF beat Auburn. They played LSU super close before in the last game, before LSU became one of the five best teams of in college football history, basically.
Right.
Yeah, they can play competitive games. I'm not arguing that they shouldn't be given the opportunity. I'm simply pointing out the fact that historically, all that the College Football Playoff Committee has shown us is that they're not going to be given the option. They're not going to be. They're not going to be put in a position where they are within striking distance of a second Clemson loss and being put in as the fourth team. Like that's, they're going to find a way to not get Cincinnati in, is what I'm saying.
Well, I mean, I just think that the path for it this year is clearer than in other years because of circumstances, because of how some things have shaken out. I'm going to give you some numbers now that are probably, no, and I'm noting this before I even read them, not indicative of how a G5 team would perform in the playoff. There's a pretty stark discrepancy between the fourth best team in the country, let alone the first best team in the country, because that's who they would probably draw as the four seed, and whoever is 8th, 9th, 10th, whatever, that they're playing in their New Year's 6 bowl games. But here are the numbers against the New Year's 6 opponents they've had. There have been 6 games so far that have featured teams from the G5. Those games have split 3-3. The only one of them that was a multi-possession game was last year when Penn State beat Memphis 53-39. These games have generally been close, and when they're not close, the G5 team kind of takes it to the P5 team. A la UCF against Auburn, a la Houston taking it to Florida State. Okay? I will note the highest ranked team that a G5 team has seen was number 7 Auburn. And say what you will, but Auburn wasn't fully there because Auburn had just lost a chance to play for the national title after getting beaten by Georgia in the SEC title game. So I'll put that on the table. I just think that at some point we got to find out if they can hang with the big boys. And I don't think there's any year better to do it than this one.
You don't need to sell me on it. I would love to see it once and for all. I would have loved to have seen it with Mackenzie Milton and that UCF team a couple years ago, but I don't know if they'll ever be afforded the opportunity.
This is why we need 8 or 6 at least. Let's do 6, give the 1 and the 2 seed a bye. Let Cincinnati play Notre Dame. Let them play Ohio State. Let it shake out.
Truly the reason we need 8 is not just so that one of these teams can get in. It's just so that we actually have some, because here's the thing with college basketball, we know who's mostly, if let's put it this way, if the college basketball tournament at the end of every conference tournament was 16 teams or 8 teams, basically, we would know probably who was getting in for a large portion of the year. And that's what we have here.
Right.
But if we got it to 8 in college football, we would know a couple teams basically are in barring massive, massive mistakes, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But in order for us to not get the same national champion every year, you need a, and maybe people want this because it's the best way to crown a legitimate best team is to have fewer playoff teams. But if you want more excitement and you want better chance for upsets,
yeah,
you need to make the top teams play more games. And so people are going to say, oh, that's not fair to these are college athletes. They don't need to play tons of games. Yeah.
Like, and I agree with that.
All of those arguments are fair. But from a pure entertainment perspective, forcing them to play an extra game against a top-ranked team is always going to cause more chaos than just not having those games.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And originally, I was stuck on four. I'm like, only four teams deserve a chance to play for this thing. And to be completely transparent, I do kind of feel like there's usually a pretty clear partition between the top four teams in the country. It's usually not evenly matched. And really, the top two or three teams in the country are pretty clearly perforated from the rest of the crop. But I also think to get adequate representation and to give equal chance to everybody who deserves a chance, because Cincinnati can only do what they can do based on what they play, we need to go to eight or at least six just so that we can answer some of these questions, because they've earned an opportunity to compete for it. They may not be good enough. We may all know they're not good enough, but they also might be. And they deserve a chance to prove it because they've done nothing wrong. Also, it's just more TV revenue. It hurts nobody. Eight is my hard line. We can't do more than eight. Making this thing three rounds is not fair. That is too much. Not the other thing is, are we really going to give the 16th ranked team in the country a chance to win a national title? Do they deserve that? No. I mean, who even is 16 right now? But yeah, does like Oklahoma State deserve a chance to win a national title? I don't think so.
Why not?
Because they lost games in the regular season and they're not good enough, and it's obvious. Cincinnati's killed everybody and is not going to lose probably this year. If they beat UCF badly in the bounce house, I just think that that's a team that's proven against all of their opponents that they're of the ilk of a national title contending team. They're probably not going to beat Alabama, although that would be interesting because Bear Bryant's grandson is the backup quarterback in Cincinnati, so I can see ESPN doing something with that. But I do think they deserve a chance to prove it. Oklahoma State's lost. We know who they are. Their resume is not good enough for them to lose a game and get in. That's why not.
I wasn't trying to stick up for Oklahoma.
No, I know you weren't.
I was just playing devil's advocate, but no. Yes, I do think eight is the perfect number, and I would love the problem is here's the deal. If we got to that point and a group of five team got an auto bid like they normally do into the group of six or the New Year's six, if that became a non-competitive game every single year in the playoff, I think people would either argue that distinguishment needs to go away and it needs to just become an at-large bid. And then if that happens, then you devalue any group of five championship that you create afterwards.
Yeah. But my hard line pretty much is there should be no chance for a team with three losses to get a chance to play for a national title. And you start finding those teams in and around that area beyond eight. Maybe not as close to eight, but beyond it. Because the natural conclusion would be if they're going to expand past eight, it's going to be 16. That's where I draw that hard line, and I think we agree there. But I think with eight, you give a fair chance to those G5 teams, but this isn't just about them. In a year like this, where Florida could win the SEC title over Alabama, and then how do you pick one of the three SEC schools? A&M's been pretty dominant. Now, they've had these cancellations that I think have pretty much put the kibosh on them having any chance to play for a national title this year in the CFP. But with that said, where we're going to have to pick one of these three SEC schools, and I don't know, I could definitely see a world where Alabama still makes it in over Florida, having just lost a close game to them in the SEC title. Is that like the craziest thing in the world? It would be a travesty, but I could see it happening.
It would be a more advanced version of the Ohio State-Penn State debate from years ago.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And can you imagine the outrage if that happened? If Florida, I think if Florida wins a close game against Alabama, they both get in. I think the committee would put both those teams in over Ohio State, if I'm being completely honest.
Uh an undefeated Ohio State that beats a Wisconsin team that proves some stuff.
That's I wouldn't pick Ohio State over Wisconsin. I just said that earlier on the show. I don't know if they're going to get a chance to play Wisconsin with the way things are escalating in that conference and the lack of runway that Wisconsin has now. They can only get one more game canceled. That's a nightmare scenario for the Big Ten. So if Ohio State's only good win is Indiana and Florida ekes out a close win over Alabama, I think both those teams get in over Ohio State, even if Ohio State is a Big Ten title winner over a team like Northwestern.
Fair.
So at that point, I think it would probably be, because I'll probably pick Clemson to beat Notre Dame whenever they play each other again, although I have a lot more doubts about that than I did before they played the first time. I think it would be Clemson, Notre Dame, Alabama, and Florida. Justin, do you agree?
Yeah, I think that's fair.
And then Oregon's just sitting out there like, hey, guys, we're just killing everybody, too.
Yeah, they're going to probably have to hang out there for a little bit.
Yeah, they will. They will.
I think that another one of the best arguments for an 8-team playoff is just that if the bar to make the playoffs gets a little bit lower and it ensures that a Pac-12 school is going to get a chance every year, and by proxy you get more upsets, and there's a little bit less of an invincibility shield kind of surrounding Clemson and Bama and such, maybe you finally get to a point where not every five-star, and maybe I'm just naive, but maybe if there's at least more belief that other teams can win the national championship, it would
diversify
a competitive. It would eventually create a better competitive balance to where we don't feel this inevitability of who's going to win the national, knowing who's going to win the national championship in week three.
Well, think about the teams who have played for it since the CFP started. I mean, it really is. It's the teams that get the five stars. The only one who's not really been represented that's gotten five stars en masse recently is kind of Oregon and Texas, and everybody else has had their shot. It's Alabama, it's Clemson, it's Ohio State, it's Georgia, and those four teams, and Oklahoma, those four or five teams have made up like 80% to 90% of the teams that have made the playoff in its 6 years of existence, and by the way, they will again this year.
Yeah, and it's also elite quarterbacks, and so Oregon got there with Mariota at the start.
Notre Dame got there with Ian Book, you know. I guess he's elite now. He wasn't then. But yeah, that was fluky.
Notre Dame is graded on a different curve. They are the private school preppy kids that you just kind of give the benefit of the doubt.
Justin is upset.
No, not really. I completely agree with that point.
Oh, you were just like, yeah, that's right.
Yes.
Okay. I really like the relationship that's forming between Gabe and Justin. This is a beautiful thing that's happening before my
Sometimes
eyes.
I bring stats that he doesn't like about his Tennessee Volunteers, but most of the time I feel like we're on the same page.
That's fair. That's fair enough.
I will say this. I'm going to diverge from this conversation for a moment before we get into Gabe's pick six in the back half of the hour. Gabe, I want to get a fresh set of eyes returning to Tennessee. What do you think the leash should be on Jeremy Pruitt right now? What does he have to do in the back half of this year to ensure his job security? What do you think of the job he's done so far?
I'm not going to call for man's job, but I will say just pulse of the situation as an outsider, it seems like people are pretty tense there, you know? So just, if I was a relationship expert and I was breaking out the relationship between the city of Knoxville and Jeremy Pruitt, I would say it's on rocky waters, turmoil situation there. So I would say he doesn't necessarily need to throw a perfect game, but he needs to throw strikes 65-70% of the time. And by throw strikes, I mean coach a competitive game to at least make people somewhat happy. The bowl game last year wasn't necessarily the most impressive showing, and so I think that kind of set people up for sour grapes and to be mad this year. But we literally just talked about what the recipe is for making it to the college football playoff. They get five stars, right?
They do.
That's not the problem. They need to find a quarterback, and if they can't find quarterback, they're never going to be able to fix this thing. That's just the simple state matter of fact.
Yeah. Oh, and the other thing is that we've seen in college football that once you get the first quarterback, it attracts the next one. We just saw this. Quinn Ewers, the number one quarterback, just decommitted from Texas and committed to Ohio State. And I think part of that definitely has to go with the fact that, like, you look at Sam Ehlinger, former Texas quarterback. You look at Sam Ehlinger and you look at Justin Fields, and you look at what their pro prospects are like, and Quinn Ewers makes an obvious business decision and says, I would rather go to Ohio State. They produce quarterbacks. And that's what's going to happen. The same thing with DJ at Clemson. The same thing with Trevor at Clemson with Deshaun Watson. Once you get that first quarterback, it's kind of downhill from there, and you're rolling. Tennessee just has yet to find that, and that's why people are so frustrated with the Guarantano situation and how it's not improved. Because that's the only thing missing at Tennessee. And maybe it's Arch Manning. Who knows?
Well, and Taj Boyd was the real starter at Clemson. So,
well, that was supposed to be Josh Dobbs. That's the problem.
That was the problem, is they didn't optimize Josh, the Dobbinator, as I like to call him.
Oh, Josh. With the Steelers now. Having a good time. Tennessee, maybe not so much. We'll get into Gabe's pick six on the other end of a break. This is Run It Up, WKGM Fox Sports Knoxville, Fan Run Radio.
If you don't write checks, how do you pay these guys?
Straight cash, homie.
Run It Up, closing down shop, White Claw Hard Seltzer Studios, Fox Sports Knoxville. Gabe Schwartz knows what that music means. It means it's time for the pick six with, of course, Gabe Schwartz. He's on the phone lines. A good week again for you. You're just killing. 37-18. Sir, on fire. I know we had a friend of ours, a mutual friend, a co-host of yours, on the Moneyline podcast, your sports gambling show. He made $2,000 last night, so you're not as good as him, but you're doing pretty good.
Wow. objectively, with my own first bank account, yes, of course not as good, but I would say we're doing things a little more responsibly.
Oh, yeah.
Than my good friend, as I like to call him, the Bank of Leaf, even though it is trending upwards out there on the West Coast. I would say I'm doing responsible things. 67% winning percentage is absolutely absurd on my picks. So the people of Knoxville, I feel like, should be bowing at my feet, begging for these picks.
Oh! You're angling to be the next head coach at the University of Tennessee, right, Gabe?
That's the long game.
It's like, I may not win, but I will cover for you. The Gabe Schwartz promise.
I am of the Sam Pittman craft. We'll win half the games and we'll cover all of them.
Oh, my goodness. I mean, here's the thing. Should I put Trevor on blast or should I not?
No, protect that man at all costs.
Okay, absolutely. He is good fun. The Moneyline podcast is a great time, and you'll learn something on the way. It's available on all podcasting platforms. Gabe is going to reveal some of these picks. Now, the extra point for you has been rough. That's your guarantee. That's at the end. You're 5-5-1. You're split. But the last 2 weeks, you've gone for two, and the one that you've added has been right, and your initial one has been wrong. So we'll see if you do any better now. I see you're only kicking the PAT this week, so that should be interesting. That'll close things out for us. We will start, though, with the Flames of Liberty heading on down to Raleigh, North Carolina, to take on the Wolfpack of NC State. The over in that game is 66.5, and you're banging it.
Both of these teams are 6-2. In their overs. In the eight games that they've played, the over has hit six of eight times for Liberty. It's hit 6 of 8 times for NC State. I don't know about you, Peyton, but I'm an absolutely huge Malik Willis fan. He has 15
Hey. Huge? Hugh Freeze? I see what you did there.
Ha-ha. You're picking up what I'm putting down. He has 15 touchdowns passing, 1 interception, 9 touchdowns rushing, 700 rushing yards. He's the leading passer. He's a leading rusher. He does it all. He's also built in the same mold of a De'Aaron King, and De'Aaron King kind of went through NC State's defense like a warm knife through butter a couple weeks ago. 66.5 points is just not very many for a college football game, let alone a college football game that involves two teams that like to absolutely air it out and play with quick tempos. 66.5, I love this number. I also just have loved betting overs for games that have occurred in the state of North Carolina. NC State, North Carolina by themselves, Wake Forest, Duke. It's been fun.
Let me riddle me this, Gabe. If Zach Wilson's a Heisman contender, why is Malik Willis not?
Because people don't respect Liberty, and they don't have the cult viewers behind it, like the BYU.
Whoa! Okay, we're gonna move on from that. Malik,
no, I'm saying
yeah.
They don't have as big of a wide fan base.
Sure. I know. So Malik Willis, though, is an Auburn transfer. Like, this guy is a player, a really, really good player. 15 touchdowns, only one pick so far this year. 700 rushing yards, 9 touchdowns from that way. He powers this offense. They've already beaten a ranked Virginia Tech on the road this year so far. They're looking to stay undefeated in 2020, and Hugh Freeze will look to continue to prove that he's the hottest coaching prospect out there for any school in the Power Five.
That's just more evidence because the argument against Liberty having success this weekend would be it's an ACC school. It's not some dinky little small school, but they've already had success against Virginia Tech, so you don't even have to worry about that being a concern.
Yeah. Here would be a real twist up. USC has looked bad the first 2 weeks. I think somehow they're 2-0, but that team does not look great. Here would be the real twist up. Hugh Freeze doesn't go to the USC in South Carolina. He goes to the USC in California. That man would fit in Los Angeles, right? Right?
I don't know. I don't know if he passes the vibe check in L.A.
Well, we thought that about Mick Cronin, but he's killing it at UCLA basketball, so...
Fair point.
All right, let's move on. Florida, Vanderbilt, the over is 68. I bet you're saying this because you think Florida might score 68 on their own.
That's true. They're 5-1 in terms of overs. I gave this out last week. Florida against Arkansas, and they hit the over of 60 by themselves. They had 63. The only way this doesn't hit is if Florida packs it in the second half and runs triple option, control the clock, slow it down, or Ken Neal and Vandy just decide to just absolutely not show up to the park and don't bring any offense. But my bet, Florida had 63 last week, Vanderbilt had 35. This is just simple math. 98 is significantly more than 68. And nothing about Florida's defense screams shutdown. I think that this game, especially because it's at Vandy, and maybe the comforts of home provide a little bit better offense for Vandy. I don't think it's going to stop Kyle Trask.
No,
but I think that this game could really mirror the LSU Vandy game last year, which I believe ended up somewhere in the 60 something to 30 something.
Yeah, like right. That was like 100 total points, yeah. I will say this about Vanderbilt. Ken Seals, Keon Henry Brooks, you've got some good playmakers outside. Amir Abdul-Rahim and Pierce out there, Chris Pierce Jr. for Vanderbilt. They've been playing better the last couple of weeks, played within one score of Mississippi State. This past weekend, scored with Kentucky and played within one score of them. Had an onside kick recovery to potentially win the game. Didn't get it to go their way. I think they may actually be able to score some points against a really bad Florida defense. I wouldn't be surprised if they get 20 on their own. That would not be the most shocking thing to me at all.
I think it's a lock that Florida puts up 50.
Do you have any idea what the money line payout for Vanderbilt is in this game?
I can look it up real quick.
All right.
It might not be offered. It does. It's actually not offered.
Oh my goodness! That's a
spread. Yeah.
Oh my god! That has to be like one of the first times in SEC history. Wow. Okay. Arizona +11.5. is your next one. You're taking the Wildcats. I can't believe you've done this.
Well, winning intrigues me, and I think that they're going to be a winner this weekend. So I'm not prejudiced to disappoint to teams that I don't necessarily enjoy. A touchdown and a half is just way too many. It's actually, did I give it to you at 11 and a half?
You did.
Okay, because it was 11 earlier this week, so you're getting an extra half a point. I think that the verdict is still out on Washington under Jimmy Lake, and I think that Grant Gunnell is definitely the second best quarterback in the state of Arizona, but he's good enough to cover in this game.
Fair enough. The money doesn't lie with Gabe Schwartz. No bias where there is money to be made. The Patriots -2 at the Houston Texans. You're really that confident in New England?
I have no numbers to back this pick up, Peyton.
Okay.
But this pick is entirely based on, did you see the comments about Jack Easterby this week?
I did see some of the discussion, yeah, about how he's not going to be retained.
Yes. So basically, this might be a really oversimplified version of the events in my mind, but Bill Belichick has been a little more candid than normal in terms of his radio appearances this year. He was asked about Jack Easterby, who used to be the team chaplain in New England, and he left to go to the Texans, and at one point there was a report that the Texans were going to promote him to be a football operations guy. Well, Belichick this week said something along the lines of, Jack is not a football operations guy, he's not a personnel guy. And then the Texans said, whoa, we weren't actually going to give him that job. And it seems like, to me, that means the Patriots are just all up in the Texans' head. So there's no way I'm taking the Texans against the Patriots. Patriots -2.
Yeah, if you aren't aware of it, the rise of Jack Easterby is one of the most fascinating. Like, if you've seen, I know you probably haven't, Gabe, and neither of you, Justin, but anybody out there listening has seen the show Succession. It kind of feels like that. The fact that he's risen from being a team chaplain to somehow being involved in the decision-making process for an NFL team is very strange and interesting. And if you don't know the story of Jack Easterby, go find it. He will not be the man to trade Deshaun Watson at the end of this year, though, because he will not be retained. Gabe, you were going to say something? Well,
by all accounts, he's a really great guy, and everyone likes him, so good for him. But, yeah, there's no reasoning that's justifiable for why he would be making football decisions. And so they probably ended up making the right decision, but the fact that they made it coincidentally right after his former employer and someone he just worked with said, hey, you know, he definitely should not be in that role. It's a little sketchy to me.
Okay. Well, we're going to hop out for a second and pay some bills. We'll finish up with the rest of the pick six and the extra point with Gabe Schwartz and round out this Friday edition of the show when we come back. This is Run It Up, WKGN, Fox Sports, Knoxville, Fan Run Radio. Run It Up, breaking back in here with a little bit of breaking news. I said something about the Lakers to start the show and how they were getting better. Well, they just got Montrezl Harrell. That's got to hurt for Clippers fans. Yeah, I don't think we can put an over-under on how sad Clippers fans are right now, but that really is tough.
We're sending a wellness check on our good friend, Griffin Peters. Yes.
Also a co-host of The Moneyline, which you should listen to. We'll talk about another one of Griffin's favorite teams here, the Vikings, who you have pegged at -7. This would be 4 wins in a row for them if they can pull it off.
I'm not a huge Kirk Cousins fan by any account. But Monday night, he seemed to get over a hump. I don't know if, 19 points against the Bears, no one's going to be calling home about. But that's more impressive on the road in a primetime game in which the Bears defense normally does show up. I think it was actually a pretty good performance. And it was his first win on Monday night. You might say this game's not on Monday night. This game's on on Sunday afternoon. It's America's Game of the Week. Troy Aikman's there, which increases the odds of Aikman just getting absolutely frustrated by very poor quarterback play. So we could be setting ourselves up for that. But I'm going to guess that the poor quarterback play comes from Andy Dalton and not Kirk Cousins. Minnesota is 6-1 against the spread in their last 7 games. So they are trending in the correct direction, as much or more because of Dalvin Cook than it is because of Kirk Cousins. And the Cowboys just stink. So Vikings minus 7 seems like the play here.
Okay. You've got the Packers money line at plus 105 as your last one in your pick six here. A big game in that division. I mean, I think the Packers kind of have it in the bag, but the Vikings, if the Packers really falter, could apply a little bit of pressure down the stretch. You've got the Packers winning this one outright.
Yeah, I think that they're the better team. Betting on Phillip Rivers just doesn't sound like a lot of fun. And I'm curious because they were 2-point favorites at the start of the week. And it, moving it to 1 as an underdog makes this an interesting spot. They're kind of at a spot where it's similar to where they were when they went on the road to Tampa Bay earlier this year. And the Colts kind of do similar things in terms of creating success, and could potentially dominate the line of scrimmage in this game, so that kind of scares me. But I think you're getting a good price in large part because there's questions about whether Devontae Adams is going to play with his ankle injury. And I'm saying all these positive things about the Colts, and for that reason I think you just say at some point Phillip Rivers is going to give you a game back because he loves to keep things close to where the spread is and do dumb things at the end of games and give them away.
Okay. He's got, what is it, 7 kids to feed at home. I'm not alleging point shaving, but
9.
You do the
9.
Math. 9?
9.
Even better. Okay. Extra point time. No 2-point attempt. Oklahoma, minus 7 Boomer Sooner and Norman.
I'll just be upfront with the people at home. I was going to give out a second one, but because there's so many guys on the COVID list right now for the Raiders, they have pulled that game off of the list, and you can't bet the Chiefs, even though the last time I saw them, they were at minus 7, and that is literally a guarantee. It's free money. The only way the Chiefs don't win is if they don't show up at the stadium. John Gruden better pray for some wins and for any hope to stop Patrick Mahomes. I think he's going to put up 40 on Sunday night. So write me down for an extra point of Chiefs minus 7 if that game actually is played and if the line comes back. But Oklahoma minus 7, for one reason and one reason only. Since 2015, Oklahoma has been a favorite of less than 7 points only 9 times during regular season games. In those 9 games, they are 8-0-1 against the spread. They've won all 9 of them. I think that they have kind of the number of Oklahoma State. They typically dominate this rivalry, mm-hmm. and a 7-point spread isn't enough to convince me otherwise. It's not a big enough number for me to be scared, and I think Spencer Rattler's going to be able to show up and show out in his first Bedlam game.
Yeah, I think so too. I'm with you on Oklahoma. I think they cover. Oklahoma State's a team that hangs their hat on defense. I don't think there's going to be a ton of defense in this game. Maybe there will. Maybe there will. Both teams are playing actually a lot better than you would expect defensively. But I do see Oklahoma getting out of this game. It always feels like when Oklahoma State should beat Oklahoma, that's when they get beat the worst in these matchups. Gundy has never beaten Lincoln Riley. I think you're dead on with this one. Gabe, give me a prediction. What do you think your record's going to be this week?
I'm going to go with the safe and consistent prediction that we've been at, 67% winners so far this fall, and I'm going to say we go 4-2, but I'm also going to say this. I've given out a parlay of the week 1 time on this show, and it won. I'm going to give it out again here if you take this. 4 teams parlay, plus 585 odds. The Liberty NC State over of 66.5 that I spoke about earlier, the Patriots money line, the Vikings money line, and the Dolphins to beat the sorry Denver Donkeys. That 4-team parlay plus 585 odds. Thank me later.
Okay. I'll thank you now. Gabe Schwartz, appreciate you coming on the program tonight. We'll talk soon.
All right. Thanks, buddy.
All right. 9:57 out here on the East Coast, winding down our final Friday show. That's going to be our final Gabe appearance on a Friday night. That's sad.
Terribly sad.
I'm sure you guys listening at home are excited to get us out of your ears once and for all. We'll run it back on Monday. Got a little bit better today. Bye-bye, everybody.